Hello, welcome back to Rogue Startups. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt. I'm back after a very long hiatus. Thank you for sticking with me and welcome back to the podcast. I've been gone because I did 100 days of AI, 100 days in a row of a YouTube video all about AI. If you haven't checked it out yet, links in the description below. You can go check it out. Would love to maybe not watch all of the videos, but kind of pick and choose the ones you want. But it took an enormous amount of time. And that's the reason for the kind of lapse in podcast episodes over the last 100 days or so. But I'm back. We'll be getting episodes out most weeks. I can't promise every week going forward, but I'm back. I'm on the mic. And this week, I'm joined by my friend Colin Gray from Alitu and the podcast host. Colin is another guy in the podcasting space. And we have a really great discussion here about podcasting, about YouTube, about Spotify, about content, and kind of where all this is going. And then, of course, I had to throw in, how does AI affect all of this? Not like, hey, are you using Claude or ChatGPT, but like, hey, what's the expectation of your customers for your product with AI being a part of the mix? How are you thinking about using AI smartly in your product to meet your customers' needs and expectations? Colin's a super smart dude. He's been in content longer than I have, which is like pretty long, and they're exceptional at it over there. So I think you'll really like this conversation with Colin Gray from the podcast host and Alitu. 10 plus years. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny because I think it's changed a lot and in some ways things are the same. So I'm interested to dig into it.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, has anything changed? Has it ever changed as much as it has in the past year? I mean, the 9 years before that, did it change as much as the past year?
You know, I think on the surface, the obvious answer is like, no, like the last year has been crazy. I think if you get over the hype of AI, which I think is what you're referring to, the kind of psychology and the human connection is still the same, and maybe even more, right? Like, I think the more that we get pulled in the AI direction, the more that people want like human in-person genuine connection, which like, you know, I get on a lot of calls with customers and they're like, oh, we think we want to start a podcast. And sometimes I push back on that. I'm like, do you really want to start a podcast like that? That might not be the best thing for your business. But, you know, you're a consultant or a coach and you have an audience, like podcasting 100% is the best thing you can do. But if you're like, hey, nobody knows of me, I want to create a piece of content and a channel to like grow my audience, podcasting's pretty tough. But I think if you're that former, it still is the best use of your time. And I think like you and I are a bit in that position, which like we have like a platform, people know us, they just want to hear from us and get to know us better. Like podcasting still wins, but it's not the answer for everybody all the time.
No. And this is kind of one of the things that's going through my head the most at the moment is, what is podcasting in 3 years, 5 years, maybe even less than that, maybe a year's time? Like, there's something around, to be clear, I don't think the medium of audio on the internet, the way podcasting is currently delivered, is going away. It's just that it seems to be subsumed so much more into, it's existing less almost as a medium of its own in many ways. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. What do you think of that? Like my kind of vague view on it is that it seems to be existing less in a view and as a medium of its own, because most people that come in new to the content space don't really see it as a thing on its own. They see it as a part of, you know, creating video and maybe having an audio alternative, or maybe publishing both to the RSS feed, or maybe it's a longer form version of their social media, all of that kind of stuff. Like, does that make sense? What do you think of that?
I agree. And I probably look at it the same way. You know, I think I'm as guilty for someone in the industry. You know, I know there are people who push back heavily against YouTube. I think that's mostly what you're talking about, is like YouTube and, you know, the social content, the shorts and stuff, is the thing that's taking the place in some people's kind of mental space of podcasting, in terms of priorities, at least. And I think that I'm probably as guilty as anyone of that. Like, you know, we were talking before we started recording, which, by the way, is the famous quote of every podcast, like the good stuff is before we record. You know, I just finished up with a big YouTube push. I published 100 videos in 100 days all about AI, and I didn't podcast at all in that time. Because I kind of made the conscious decision, like, hey, me, for myself and my whatever personal brand, it's more important to carve out a wedge on YouTube for me right now than it is to continue with the podcast. That, like, you know, my podcast has been pretty like low effort and static for a long time. So I wanted to do something new and different. And I think it's probably easier to grow a YouTube channel than it is a podcast these days.
Did you rebroadcast any of that? Like, did you even think about taking some of those, your 100 days, and repurposing them as audio only?
No, I didn't even think about it. No.
Yeah, just a separate thing. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that focus, isn't there? Your focus is grow the YouTube channel. And as soon as you add in the, oh, but I could make some audio-only versions of this, put it on an RSS feed, all that kind of stuff, that suddenly that takes away the focus for sure.
Yeah.
I actually think, I was referring to YouTube in many ways, but actually I think it's even bigger than that. Like, I think, did you see, you know Beehive as a platform?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so email platform, if you're out there listening, you haven't seen it, it's originally an email platform, kind of pitch themselves as the place you can grow email. They're similar to Substack in some ways, but more tools built in. They had a big launch event yesterday, and I don't know if you saw this, Craig, but they've added podcasting into their mix now. So podcasting, they're doing hosting, they're doing including the podcast into the newsletter. And I think, so even more than just like a YouTube crossover, there's now a lot of, and I've seen this in Kit as well. So Kit is what I use for my email marketing, and Kit has their app store, and they have now podcast players built in, and we're looking to integrate with that and have a podcast player for Alitu as an example, so that it's built into Kit and therefore our users can just place their player right into their newsletter. And so that's just another place to listen to it. It's coming from the RSS feed. You're going to take it from there, but it's all into email marketing as well in that case. And so I almost think it's like, it's going to be all of it down the road. Video and audio for sure, but then email as well, and then social. And then, I mean, it's always been kind of integrated with blogging, hasn't it, within it, with embedding players. But
From a you know, Alitu business owner perspective, do you say, because like, you know, I'll give you a hard time a little bit, like you guys added hosting, you know, last year, and I was like, motherfucker, like, you know, like, do you look at that and say, like, we got to add blogging now, and we got to add email, and we got to add like social, and we got to add, you know, video, and we got to be the HubSpot of a content platform? Or do you say, we do podcasting, it's what we do, we're pretty good at it, and we want to integrate with other tools like Kit and all these places that our customers are doing other stuff?
I think it's exactly that. Yeah. It's a good question. Like, we were editing first. So our product was podcast editing to start with. And that was where our strength was. It was how to figure out how to make editing easier, automate some parts of that. Audio cleanup came in as well. And we expanded out beyond that just because the overall goal, the strategy, the aspiration was to make creating your podcast as easy as possible. And the more we went down the road of just having editing, the more people were complaining about then still having to record and whatever else and upload it to us. So we're like, well, we could build some recording, and actually that brings some streamlinedness into the process, and actually brings some advantages, because then suddenly you could have a little, you know, signal button where you make a mistake, and then you can make a bookmark, and that bookmark then goes into the editing. So the two together actually work quite nicely. And so then, yeah, it was a natural same thing with the hosting, because they were then downloading the file, taking it elsewhere. And yeah, we still integrated with other hosts. But I honestly, though, that I look back at some of that and think that was too far. Like, I think we've got a great product just now that covers so much of the podcasting system. It's a great one, all in one thing. But I do wonder sometimes what would have happened if we just stuck to editing alone and just concentrated only on that. I don't know what the product would look like now and whether it would be better. Mm. Like, what have your thoughts been over the years, like running a hosting product and what you add and what you don't?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're really fortunate with hosting that it's very sticky. You know, you on the editing side may see like higher churn, people coming and going and stuff like that. Sure. Like, our churn, we're very lucky. It's extremely low. You know, we have a great product, we have a great team, we have great documentation, we have great systems all around, you know, reducing churn. I think if you look at just like from a higher level business perspective, like, how can you grow? You can grow in your space by getting more customers. You can get existing customers to pay you more money, which may be where like expanding your product comes in. Or you can just go to the next door neighbor kind of industry that your existing customers already are, which is like, if you're a podcasting whatever, can you either extend your platform to be like a blogging platform or social media platform, or just build a whole separate thing and then have two different companies, which is kind of like what you do, right? With a podcast host being like a content play, but you also sell like content memberships and stuff like that. So like, I think any of those are fair, right? Get more customers, get existing customers to pay you more money, either via more or different products. From a business perspective, I think from a mind share perspective, I think the reality is we are not the cutest girl at the dance anymore in podcasting. podcasting.
Is podcasting as an industry, like as a medium as a whole?
Yeah. It's not the most, I mean, I run a podcasting company and the podcast is not the most important thing for me in my in my marketing. Here's a perfect example. I had on Stephen Robles from Riverside for our podcast. And I said, hey man, like, tell me about your guys' podcast. They don't have one.
Right, yeah.
They don't have one. The feed from Libsyn shut down this week. I know, like, you this podcast you guys have had for a long time. But I think it's just kind of telling, like, of the major hosts and, you know, podcast players, 20% have a podcast, but all of them have a blog. Most of them have a YouTube channel.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then is YouTube the now current most popular?
To me, it is. Yeah.
There's still, I mean, that's the question though, isn't it? That's the tension, is there's still podcasting itself, like the podcast listenership has never been as high as, you know, it's grown, but it's never been as regular and as popular as video on the telly. You know, people watch telly, and YouTube has grown into that as well. So it's now competing with Netflix and the like. But there's always been a real core, the way I've always seen it is how much more engaged that audience is. It's always so much smaller, but actually it's just about as engaged. If you look at like the kind of conversion per thousand, let's say, do you know what I mean? So if you have a thousand podcast listeners, you might convert 500 of them. But if you have 10,000 YouTube watchers, you might still only convert 500 of them. It's just way lower conversion. So the numbers almost don't matter, but they kind of do, because when it comes to putting resource into it, it's always quite hard to track that conversion. And therefore you tend towards the things that have the highest, don't you?
I think what you're saying is kind of what I was alluding to earlier, which is like, for certain types of people in certain situations, a podcast is by far the most valuable kind of marketing real estate they can have. I think maybe the rub is that's not everyone or even most people. I think that's the difference. You know, what's interesting is like, even like I publish on, you know, social and YouTube and stuff, but most people know me from my podcast, maybe because I've been doing it for 10 years. Maybe because it's the way that people actually get to know you well, as opposed to, you know, freaking Twitter or whatever.
Have you seen I mean, it's the same. The debate's going on a lot right now around video versus audio and everything, and the kind of the confluence of YouTube and podcasting, and the fact that many podcasts, actually we see starting these days, the newer generation of podcasters, they don't even think about the RSS feed. They actually just see the podcast as being a YouTube show. But it's just the fact that it's appearances, isn't it? I think Brian Barletta and Tom Webster did a study around this a while back, where they found that the biggest, with certain age groups, I can't remember the exact denominations, but with certain age groups, the word podcast doesn't mean anything other than two people chatting to each other with microphones in view. So it's literally just the aesthetics of it. It's nothing to do with where it is, where you watch it, where you listen to it, what the format is, as long as you can see two people and two microphones.
You know, that's the Colin and Samir thing, right? Like, that's a podcast, but everyone knows it as a YouTube channel. That's, you know, Stephen Bartlett and Diary of a CEO. Those are podcasts. They just happen to be ultra popular YouTube channels.
And I don't think that matters. Like, I'm not one of these stuck to the RSS feed people. Like, I don't really care about that. It's more, even if we got rid of the name podcast, it's more just like conversational content, essentially. It's like long form conversational content. That's what we love and what we teach to do.
I do think the difference in, you know, again, when we're chatting with customers, and from a content strategy perspective, the really big difference is like the intentionality and how you approach this thing that you're creating. So you call it a podcast, you call it a YouTube channel or whatever. Like, you asked about, like, did I publish my 100 Days of AI as a podcast? No, because like 100% of those videos were meant to be YouTube videos, not podcast episodes. Like, we could repurpose this conversation, but this is a podcast. It probably will do better overall as a podcast. You know, me talking about how I'm using Claude Code as a non-developer to build SaaS or whatever doesn't fly as a podcast. And I think that, like, as folks are looking at like, what do I want to do? I think always the question is like, what channel are you optimizing this thing for, and do really, really, really good there? And yeah, you might get carry over to the other channels, but it's not going to perform the same. And so like that's kind of what we coach folks. And I guess like that's how I think about it. Like, this is a podcast episode. I'm optimizing this for audio. We'll put it on YouTube, but I kind of don't care what happens there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, some of it doesn't, absolutely. It doesn't matter. It's down to business aims. It's down to, or your personal aims. It might not be for a business, might it? It might be just be a hobby and you just want to grow a community around it or have an impact around a charity or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah.
Can I ask you a question about Spotify and speaking of Stephen Bartlett, you know, his Flightcast. It's funny. I know the guy, his co-founder there, Rocks.
Yeah.
We actually chatted about, you know, hey, can we like do something together? I didn't know Stephen Bartlett was like the guy behind this.
Yeah.
we talked probably a year and a half ago. You know, they're getting access to come to a special Spotify API to publish YouTube videos. They're publishing to YouTube first and then pulling down audio, which is like backwards from how like I think we do it, you know. And then I saw a thing from Jay Klaus this week about like his success on Spotify with video and how he's thinking about his, you know, exactly this conversation. Like, what is this piece of content I'm creating? What medium am I optimizing it for? And like, where is that published? Like, I don't know. What do you think about like Spotify as a video platform, I guess is the question.
I struggle with it because it's always hard to separate your biases from, you know, what reality is, isn't it? Because I was a very early Spotify user, like first year or two of it launching, and I have used it. So I've used it for like decade plus. Is that a couple of decades now? Might even be, I can't remember now. But
oh, wow. Okay.
So it's just music. Spotify is music to me. And when they got into podcasting, it was when we were in podcasting as well. It was like 5-10 years or whatever after I'd started using it. So I was like, this is weird. And I was already an established podcast listener. I use some like over-the-top podcast listening apps that no normal people use. So I didn't swap. And I don't think the Spotify listening experience for podcasts is very good, in my opinion, like for the way I listen to podcasts. So I never switched. And Spotify is still and always will be, I think, just a music app.
Okay.
So I have never, and I don't see myself ever watching video on there. And I don't know what would make me change that. Mm. That's probably just my ingrained habits. But I don't know, like, where are you at with it? Do you use it as a listening app, or do you think it's a place to watch? Do you do it there?
So I literally never use Spotify.
No,
partly because like I signed up for an account when we were in France, and now that we're back in the US, like I can't log in and all this, and I'm just like, fuck it, like whatever.
Not using it, yeah.
I mean, we at home we play music through Amazon Music just because it's free on Alexa, and on my phone I only listen to. Man, it's really sad. I listen to one podcast these days, and it's The Rest is History, British podcast. Only when I'm at the gym. It's the only time I listen to podcasts these days. The rest of the time, it's either music or I listen to YouTube videos in the car.
Yeah, okay.
And my podcasting
so watching
app.
The video.
Right, yeah. And I can watch the video in my car, but like I almost got in a wreck like 5 times the one day that I like hooked it up and I was like, no, we're not doing this. So I just put the phone in the cup holder and just listen. I listen on Overcast on my phone. Yeah. That's it. And I don't need much.
Similar for me, yeah. I don't know. I've uploaded a few videos. Have you tried it yet with Spotify? You've not been podcasting for a little while, so maybe not.
No, it's a pain in the ass. Like, you know, we don't have access to the super secret Spotify API to publish video, and no one else does either. And so to do it, I would have to go specifically to Spotify for Creators or whatever and upload the video separate from my publishing Cadence and Castos.
Yeah, totally. Same here. Because you have video hosting in Castos. Do you have an idea what your kind of split is? Like how many people percentage-wise actually use the video hosting as opposed to audio?
A couple percent.
Is it tiny? Really?
Yeah. Mostly because of that. It's an incomplete solution. Like we publish video and it goes to Apple and it goes to a few other places, and then places like Overcast actually will take the video and strip it down to audio. But Spotify's blocked. I think iHeart is blocked. That's probably wrong. But a couple other just like it just doesn't work at all. And so it's like,
Where do you think the podcast software industry goes from here? Because it is really tricky that way. Like people are... You're right. I saw that as well. I've talked to Rox a few times too about like whether we can, you know, integrate editing and hosting and blah, blah, blah. But it's frustrating when you see other companies. Like I got in touch with Apple not that long ago asking like, how can we get access to, you know, I've seen a few platforms now showing your engagement stats, the stuff that you can only get Podcast Connect.
Mm.
And I've seen there's a few platforms now actually have that inbuilt. Like, oh, where did that come from? How can I get hold of that? Apple are notoriously very secretive, obviously. And it's very tricky. And it turns out actually there are ways that we could do it, but it's like you have to set up custodial accounts and all this kind of background stuff that then we have to manage. So it's really tricky. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to think where if we have some companies like Flightcast, like getting that access because they have such a huge influencer that basically has influence over Spotify, like where does the rest of the company, where does everyone else go? I'm not sure.
You know, I, Yeah. So when delegated delivery from Apple first came out, which is like the ability to have like paid content directly in Apple, which like we've had paid content well before delegated delivery, but not like natively in the Apple Podcast mobile app. That's kind of all that it adds. And like this concept of like what we call hybrid podcasters, like free and paid stuff all in one feed. When that came out, we were not part of it. There was four hosting providers that were part of it. And Matt Medeiros, who was part of our team then, was like losing his mind. He's like, the company's over. Like it's just never going to work. Everyone's going to leave. And you know what happened? Nothing. Like absolutely nothing. And then we got access to delegated delivery and kind of the second tranche of it. And you know what happened? Nothing. So like, I shouldn't say nothing. Like, do we get one customer a month or two customers a month because of that? Yeah. Maybe. Is everyone use? I don't know anyone who uses it. And even like on our platform, I can tell you out of thousands of customers, handfuls use it. And so I just look at it and say like, this is the reality of podcasting, I think. And I think this is the reality of most software. Most software is there's a really finite amount of things that people care about. And if you do that, then the rest of it, they don't care about. Like people want out of a podcast is, I want to publish my stuff and it go everywhere very reliably. And I don't ever want to have to worry about it. And then if you can tell me a little bit of something about who's listening, that's cool. I think that's the kind of software that we are. I think you will like the recording and editing, like might have the opportunity for more gains. But a podcast hosting platform, it's like, you just can't stuff a lot more value into what we do. There are other softwares where that's not the case.
Yeah, no, I could reflect that. Yeah, for sure. Like our editing side of things, like we built our current editing product up over the first few years and kind of covered the core pains, the big pains, like how to make actually cutting out mistakes easier, how to make splitting easier, that kind of stuff. And we've made it so much better over the last 5 years since then, but it's incremental gains as to covering that pain. And I think there's still space. There's plenty of things we can work on, we could work on, we are working on that can make a difference. But I think you're right. It's never going to be as big as going from no editing to some editing.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. The hope that I would have as well is that the part of the reason why things like delegated delivery maybe don't have that much of an impact is it's just not open, is it? And I think it's partly why Spotify is probably going to struggle longer term with their video play as well, potentially, because it is a separate place. Like you say, you have to go and do a different job just for that platform. You know that only a small portion, well, not a small portion, maybe a third of your listeners are listening there, watching there. So you're doing this whole extra job just for that. With Apple, with the delegated delivery particularly, you're trying to monetize and, you know, earn some money out of your show and help your listeners get this extra great content that you want to deliver to them. But it's only going to go to a quarter of them, a third of them, because that's all the number that use Apple Podcasts to listen. So it's all of these things that are not open, that are not available to everyone, that are not, you know, universal across the whole industry or the whole listenership, that just cause trouble, I think, and really diminish interest in them.
I think one of the big questions that comes up a lot for us is like monetization. And of course, there's like multiple ways to monetize a podcast. We kind of break it down into like direct and indirect. Direct being like ads, donations, paid subscriptions, and indirect is like I podcast to sell more Casto stuff, you know, through my kind of whatever personal brand or whatever. We will never run ads on my podcast or anything. I think that monetization and the accessibility of monetization is a challenge in the industry, partly because it's a decentralized experience, you know, as opposed to like YouTube. I don't know, like how do you guys see monetization? Because I think that if it was easy to make a bunch of money from podcasting, more people would come to it. You know, it's probably the reality.
Yeah, for sure. It's going back to that question that really works well for that you brought up, that works really, really well for coaches, consultants, personal brands, anyone who is a high ticket product with low numbers, low volume, but it just doesn't work that as well for monetizing anything slow to Yeah, for sure. I think the way we look at it is we've looked a few times at adding advertising to our episode builder. There's a few lovely ways I think could add advertising marketplaces, dynamic ads, all that kind of stuff to our episode builder. Because our episode builder is built in that way already. It's block based. So you could have an ad block, your first part of your interview, your ad block, your second part. You could make that block, it could be a dynamic ad or it could be a host read ad or it could be whatever you want to build in. And it'd be really simple to then to swap that out and to replace it in the old back catalog and stuff. But when we added hosting, that was part of the thought. It was part of the idea that it would tie into the method that we use to build an episode and enable that. But our audience has always been beginners, and it always, I think it always will be, because our whole philosophy is how to make it as easy as possible to build your episode. And as soon as people get big enough numbers to actually benefit from advertising, they often just get a team member who produces the podcast for them anyway, in which case they get this professional editor who Ality is not built for. It's not built for professional editors, and I don't think we ever will have it built for them. So advertising just wasn't a monetization method that suited our audience, essentially. The way that our audience, the later stage ones, we've got all the beginners, we've got all the mid-stage podcasters that stick with us for years, but then the later stage ones that stick with us are the ones that stay independent, and it's still just them, and they keep their workflow pretty simple, and their monetization method is things like community support. So premium content, donations. Yeah. Premium content is an interesting one, in that we could build that in quite easily, because it fits the same kind of thing. We could have our episode builder with the blocks. This dynamic block appears in the episode if you are a non-subscriber, but as soon as you're a subscriber, that disappears, and therefore it's suddenly ad-free. Or you've got a piece of content, a block that you add in, which is a behind the scenes that's only available to subscribers, and it's dynamic. But it's akin to advertising, dynamic ads, but it's actually a different thing. It's about building a custom premium piece of content. So that's kind of where we've looked at it, for sure. And I think that's the way it would suit us and the independent podcasters that we were, for sure. Mm. Are there ways that you do it just now?
So yeah, I mean, the episode is, it's like an all or nothing thing. The episode is public or private. We have a concept of like hybrid podcasting, where in a feed you can have public and private content that can be either free or paid. Like gated based on email or whatever membership site. Ads are on a podcast level, so you can't have ads on some episodes and not on others. So if you wanted like an ad free version, you would no, that's not true. With hybrid podcasting, you can have one of the benefits is what we call it, is like ad free or like early release or whatever. So that's kind of how we do it. But for ads, it's like on an episode level, it's all or nothing. Whatever. We use a company called SoundStack, which is like a marketplace, and they do all the ad and injection and everything. And they've been good. It's just like an off the shelf thing we just kind of buy, but it's only pre-roll and post-roll, mid-roll, and like what we call bring your own. We don't have. We're looking at building it. That would probably be like the next big feature we build, is like bring your own. So kind of like dynamic content management is what we would call it, where like it's not even an ad, but I think it's pretty cool. It's like if I was still podcasting in my 100 Days of AI, I would have had like a bit like, hey, I'm in the middle of 100 Days of AI right now. Go to the YouTube channel and check it out. And then afterwards, I could just turn that off. And then all of the feed and all the episodes would get re-rendered without that, instead of having to hard like... And of course, this is how you guys do it. But this is a pretty big thing that people are asking for. It's one of the few things that people are asking for. And we've kind of just said for a long time, like, it's a big deal. Like, that would really change. That's a whole big product. And so we've resisted it. Because like, back to the like, how much do most people really care about that? Yeah. Most people don't care about it. Some people care kind of a lot.
But most people don't. Yeah, no, it's so tricky. That's one of the hardest things I've found about running a product over the years, is that exact balance. It's the how do you prioritize the requests when there's, you've got different volumes. So this is more popular than that, but then you've got, this is much harder than that. And then this is actually much more on trend than that. There's so many variables to it, and all of it takes investment to plan out, to spec out, to then start building, to release and market, and how much impact does it have long-term as well?
Whole
job.
How, the obligatory like AI conversation, I guess this is where some people will drop off, and I'm and I'm sorry, but I think it's just so fascinating. Like outside of like, is AI cool and how are we using it stuff, how are you seeing AI affect your customers and maybe their expectation of you?
Oh, that's it. I've not heard it. I've not had it asked that way. What do you mean? So affect our customers as in how they create their content, or you mean affect them as in what they're asking of us?
Both, I guess. Yeah. So like how is AI making creating content easier or harder for your customers? Mm-hmm. And then how do you fit in that, in the sense of like, oh, we have AI stuff, or we're complementary to AI, or whatever?
Yeah, we the last part first. Like, we sit in it in that we've got a lot of AI stuff built into Ality, for sure. So we've got the audio cleanup's been in there for years. That's got better and better, more and more AI powered, down to being able to remove dog barks and stuff like that these days. Like, that's, I don't know, it's like a job that you just don't have to do anymore. You barely, I mean, that Matthew had a conversation around, do you even have to worry about your gear and your studio these days? And you do still. Yeah. Like, I think it is definitely well worthwhile doing that. But equally, you can also go out, as we did, and and record an episode on the main street in Edinburgh, the capital of our country. Very, very noisy. And it came out fine because actually nearly all of it was removed and our voices were completely ramped up and EQ'd and everything. And it's mental how good it is. So everything from that to, you know, adding in transitions in music, and a lot of it's like not technically the modern, like the kind of now the new presentation of AI, but it's a tool doing something automatically for you. We have built in some kind of true modern AI, as in titles and descriptions. So that's the obvious one that we really struggle with. So that was a nice little pain to solve. And so, yeah, there's a few things in there like that, like the way, tons of things that really assist people in making their stuff. We've been working though on building out. We also have our show planner. We built this tool a couple of years ago called our show planner, which is more about helping people get past that first stage where they actually have, go from a vague idea of what they want to talk about to having an A4 page in front of them that includes their audience avatar, their uniqueness for their show, their pitch for their show, maybe even their first five episodes, that kind of stuff. And that's been working really nicely for quite a while as a free tool just to help people get started. And then we can try and help them actually start it with Alitu. Mm-hmm. So we've been starting to build on top of that other elements of the more soft skills of podcasting, like the episode planning, like guest finding, like guest outreach, like marketing tactics, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the next thing for us, I think. But I worry though that it's something that basically every other company is building. They're building an assistant, an AI assistant for all the little jobs, and how you make it stand out from just using Claude or ChatGPT. And we have actually some really interesting smart ideas around that, I think, that do make it genuinely better than that. But I think that's a real danger. Like, is that something you're thinking about just now? Like how you build this type of tools or that kind of assistance?
Yeah, like we have a, you know, we call it the AI assistant. It does show notes and titles and social posts and all the stuff, right? Because we get the transcript anyhow and we send it to Assembly, and Assembly has, you know, Claude under the hood that we call. And that's cool. Like it's good. Like it's really quite good. We've had automatic chapters for a long time. We transcribe all the episodes, like it's free inside the platform. Yeah. So we've had that for like years. And we just pay, you know, we pay Assembly $800 a month or something, you know, for basically giving away all that functionality to customers, because it's expected. Back to the question of like, what do people expect? People expect all that stuff. So it's just kind of like the increased cost of doing business. I think the place in general where AI really is most valuable is doing something that people can't do by themselves with ChatGPT or Claude. So like probably, we'll pull your analytics in and we'll pull all of your content and we'll say like, hey, what works really well? What have you talked about that did well? What haven't you talked about that you should talk about? When you release on Tuesday versus Thursday or 10 o'clock versus 4 o'clock, it does better. Like that's the kind of stuff that like nobody else can do. And so if you're looking at like building AI to do a thing, doing that is probably the play.
It's finding the data you have that no one else does it? And
it's defensible.
As a creator platform, both of us have so much information about the topic that the person talks about, the way they're, you know, what their voice is like, what they have covered, what they haven't, those gaps, the type of guests they get, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's part of how we're thinking about it as well, is how to use that data essentially to make it more useful. Mm-hmm. And I think there as well, there's something around interface too. I was listening to an episode of, you ever come across the show Cheeky Pint by the Stripe co-founder?
No.
It's really cool, actually. It's,
I have. I didn't know that was the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's by Patrick Collison, is that his name? That might be the other brother, actually, not the one that's on the show. But he talks to really interesting people, and he had the CEO of Anthropic on recently. They had a whole conversation that was really interesting, actually. And one of the things they brought up was that models are getting so good, but chatbots haven't and may never have, because it's not really their function, much of a UI, much of a UX to actually help people solve. And that's where the next layer comes in, where you make a specialist tool that actually it's still just a chatbot under the hood, but it's the UX really that actually makes it far more useful. Partly solving that blank page problem, as in giving you some prompts like here, like so the AI prompting you, as opposed to the other way around, like here's where you could start, here's where a next step might be, blah, blah, blah. Here's some output that you can actually edit, as opposed to looking at Claude and saying, oh, that sentence doesn't work. Can you edit that for me? Because I can't go in there and delete this. So I found that really interesting, actually, around that being where tools like us could utilize those models and actually make something really useful out of it for our customers.
I think a good mental model here, pun not intended, I guess, is like if you were starting today from scratch, how would you make your product AI first? And how would we make our product AI first? And I think that probably answering that and doing mostly that is like a really smart thing. Is like, okay, we're gonna have AI at the center of content creation. It's going to do all the ideation. It's going to do the research, and somebody's going to show up and record and edit and publish. I think that's probably the answer.
Knocking that question back to you, for your 100 days of YouTube, how did you use it to make that actually sustainable? Because that is a huge job. Like, did you use AI a lot to make that much more doable?
I didn't, ironically. Really? I didn't because, no, that's not entirely true. I used it a lot for titles and thumbnails. I use a tool called Creator Hooks. So creatorhooks.com. Really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you put in what the video is about and it does like title and thumbnail suggestions. Got a whole bunch of like psychology and stuff. I use that every day for creating titles and thumbnails because that's like the most important part of YouTube. For the concept, I used Manus and Perplexity a little bit to do kind of like research on other channels in my space. And hey, what have they talked about that like I haven't? Basically, you know, what we're saying. Yeah. But most of the time, I kind of just like, I'm in the space. I was watching a ton of YouTube during that time, just like learning. Because that was the hardest part of the whole thing is like every video I did, I had to learn the thing and then go teach it. You know, as opposed to like, I could do 100 days of podcasting so easily because I've been doing it for 10 years. Yeah. But like the AI stuff is changing so quickly. It's like, okay, I got to go learn Perplexity Sonar and I got to go learn freaking Google's new thing. And then I got to do the video on it. So like some of it was like just, Anthropic 4.5 just dropped. Let's go. Or Claude Skills just dropped and I got to go learn that thing. So some of that was like pretty easy from the ideation perspective. And then like a lot of it was just pretty automated. Like I had an editor, one of the guys on our team, and I reused most of the description every video. I would just write a paragraph about what the video was about. I scripted, no, it's not true. I used AI to script maybe 10 of the videos. Like if I wanted to talk on an off camera kind of topic or off screen topic, like I did one on climate change and AI, which is like a huge thing. One on like the cost of AI, like the whole, like the actual cost, privacy, like, yeah, Manus just wrote the whole script for me. But the rest of it, like, yeah, AI just didn't fit in that workflow really well.
What did you learn most from that, from doing those videos, 100 of them in 100 days? You finished now, haven't you? I think I saw you post your...
Yeah, notes. I finished on Monday. Yeah, today. So we're recording on Friday. I published the last one on Monday. And then I actually put another one out this week. So like I'm not stopping. trying to stick with it. Yeah. What did I learn? I think that like, you know, I get a lot of like grief from like some of my friends and stuff like, oh my gosh, like AI. Craig thinks AI is the answer for everything. I learned that it has its lane. It has its application in place where it's really, really, really good. And where it's really good, it's so good, it's scary. Like I am quite scared of what will happen to us at like a humanity level with AI and jobs. Like 100%, like we're going to have mass unemployment. Not because AI is going to like take all of our jobs, but because like a person can now do 2 or 3 times the work as they used to. It's just 100%.
Companies that do the work.
Yep. So like I'm vibe coding some stuff on the side and like I can just sit here and right now I have a Claude agent going and building a feature as we're talking. I don't need to hire a developer. Like I literally don't need, I probably should hire a developer at some point, but like I can get the first version of this thing out the door. That's $20,000 worth of paying a developer that like I just don't have to do. And you multiply that times everybody, everywhere in every business, that's a very significant impact. And so like I knew that going in. I thought actually AI would be more all-encompassing and learned that like that actually is like a really good tool. It's a really, really, really good tool, but it's not entirely taking anyone's job.
Doesn't answer all.
It's just making less jobs necessary.
What about growing on YouTube? Like a lot of people listening to this, there'll be podcasters on your side, there'll be podcasters on my side. How do you, whether it's actually promoting a podcast episode or whether it's like YouTube videos on the side to grow your content, what did you learn about growing a channel?
So the biggest thing I learned is the concept is everything. And I knew this, from talking to people and you hear people like Colin and Samir or, you know, whoever, you know, the concept is everything. And if you don't have the concept, then you can't engineer the title and thumbnail, which is this next most important thing. And a couple of times I did that and got it right. And actually most of the time I kind of didn't. And, you know, if you look at the analytics of the channel, like I have a couple videos that are like 100,000 views and they're awesome. They're both listicles and they're both mass appeal. And so the concept is like, it's a good concept for everyone. And they're both, you know, around like how to make money with AI. And then I had a whole bunch that like I just wanted to do. Like the one I released today was like 3 things I learned with Claude Code, you know, agents. Like I just want to do that video. you know, and there's going to be 200 people. There's going to be 200 people that watch that are really interested. And I think that's the difference with like between podcasting and YouTube is like in a channel, I can make both those videos and they can perform wildly different. In podcasting, like I'll have 800 people listen to this episode because we're going to simulcast this on my podcast. Colin, if you were amazing, still 800 people would listen to that. If this episode sucks, still 800 people are going to listen to it. And that's the challenge of like growing a podcast versus a YouTube channel is on you. You can have a winner and you could maybe only ever have one, but you could get, you know, I grew from 250 to 11,000 subscribers in 100 days.
That's amazing.
I will never, ever, 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 ever in the history of this podcast have 11,000 listeners. I know because we have, you know, I see the analytics, very popular podcasts in our world that you would be shocked how few listeners they have.
Yeah.
But we think that's the podcast in this space or that space.
Yeah.
We will, as a platform, I bet we don't have a dozen podcasts that have more than 100,000 downloads a month.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? I think it comes.
No, we're not the biggest. You know, the biggest shows don't come to Castos. They go to fucking Libsyn or whatever.
But the biggest shows are like it is a total. It's not even an 80-20 rule or a 90-10. It's like a 99-1 rule, isn't it? Podcasting has it. Joe Rogan is like 90% of the listenership for the whole of podcasting. I don't know. That's not the number exactly, but it'll be something ridiculous like that kind of scale.
And that's like all the way back to the very beginning though, is like, that's fine. It doesn't matter. The 800 people that listen to this podcast, it is extremely valuable. And I will always do this podcast. You know, like my co-host left a few years ago and I was like, dude, I'm going to keep doing this because it's way more important to me than it is valuable to anyone else, I think. Yeah. And I think that's how people should look at it.
And we've seen people making a really good living out of a listenership of 50 or 100 because literally they can convert half of those people. You run a $2,500 a month coaching service and you only convert 10 of them and suddenly that's a great living for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're totally right.
Yep.
All right. We're right at the top of the hour, Craig. Should we tie it up there?
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Colin. This is great.
That was great fun. Yeah. So yeah, go and check out, like, you're over at Castos, aren't you, Craig? Castos.com. So for all your hosting needs, and if you want podcast editing, come over to alitu.com as well. Check us out. But yeah, great fun talking always, Craig. So yeah, cheers. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Colin.